everyone. This is Gordon, W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. All right, that's a good answer. Nothing heard. Well, welcome everybody to the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net, brought to you by the Bergen Amateur Radio Association and also the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club, whose repeater we are using, or commuter repeater we're using, I should say. In any case, before we start, is there a station who could keep the net log, the roster, for tonight? I'd appreciate it. This is W2TTT.
Uniform 2 Sierra.
W2S, W2TTT. Hello, Mr. Randy. Would you be able to do that?
Affirmative.
So I'm just leaving the home of KD2CKI and can run the net, but just can't write it. Alrighty, well, that's super. Thank you very much. I trust you will have a comment in short order during the net.
That is correct.
Alrighty, very good. Well, alright, with no further ado, this net is a weekly net held for the purposes of having a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computing, telecommunications, the natural phenomena that support our hobby, the things we do with our hobby, the things we aspire to do, the things we have done in the past that we might want to comment about, and of course, the things we never want to do again. Sometimes can be as instructive as anything else. As my friend Dick Nadel says, there are at least 29 or 27 different kinds of amateur radio, and our opportunity here tonight is to discuss some of them. So we ask that you check in with your call sign name, indicate whether you have a question, a comment, a for sale swap or wanted item, some combination of those things, or none of the above. You might ask, why none of the above? Well, because if we know you're there, then we can tailor the net to what we perceive your needs to be. We can also call upon you occasionally, should there be something that we don't have an answer to, but we think you might have some insights to. So it's very helpful if you will check in, even if you don't think you have anything to contribute. Okay, how to sign into the net, or I should say where to sign in the net. This is the 146.955 megahertz repeater, operated by the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club in Alpine, New Jersey. It is not on the Alpine Tower, but it is. We also have EchoLink. That could be accessed by K2 Foxtrot Juliet-L. The echo link is K2 Foxtrot Juliet-L for Lima. Again, the 2-meter frequency is 146.955. The offset is the standard minus 600 kilohertz. And our PL is 141.3. PL is 141.3. So, we hope that you'll join us at one point or another during the evening if you're listening, preferably during the check-in process. So, with no further ado, let's do this in call sign group order. Any stations whose call signs begin with the letter Whiskey, please call K2BAR. WI2W, Steve, with a question and a comment. Good evening, Steve. I got your question and comment. Any other Whiskeys?
W2JEK with a comment.
Good evening, Donald. Got your comment. W2JEK, so you're squared away. Who else? The Whiskeys.
Good evening, Gordon. W2UMP, Jim in Pearl River. Just listening.
WA2UMP, United Mike Papa. Uniform Mike Papa. Very good. Welcome aboard. I heard something on EchoLink. I was going to do a separate EchoLink check-in, but was there a station at EchoLink who wanted to say something? It must have just keyed up. Okay, very good. Any other Whiskeys?
I think that was Kai. He was talking about joining via Echo Link, but we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, I'll get Kai then later. Very fine. Any additional Whiskeys?
Connected KD2GK.
station in a moment. All right. Any other whiskeys? Last call for whiskeys. Okay, I'm just assuming WE2S will fall in probably after Steve and Don. We'll do that. All righty. Very good. How about Novembers?
N2NBR.
N2NBR. Go right ahead. Introduce yourself and state your intentions, please.
Hi, Gordon. Here's Jonathan. Jonathan, short for John. No, I'll try that again. John, short for Jonathan. I don't really have anything. I'm just sort of listening and looking forward to You Learned a Gentleman and to NBR.
Of which you are one, my friend.
Thank you, John.
Any other Novembers?
This is N2OEL with a great antenna question.
A great antenna question. And please note, Noel, that it's the Novembers are not going last. Glad to hear you're in the neighborhood still. Very good. Congratulations on being home. Alrighty, any other Novembers? Okay, how about Alpha Station? Okay, how about Kilo 2s?
K2 GFM.
Is that Kilo 2 Golf Foxtrot November?
Kilo 2 Golf Foxtrot Mike, formerly Kilo Delta 2 Hotel Papa Yankee Greg, and just listening.
Very good, Greg. K2 Golf Foxtrot Mike. Congratulations on the new entity call. Very nice. Are there any other Kilo 2?
Kilo Charlie 2's Zulu Foxtrot Mike with greetings and salutations.
AKC2ZFM. Name and your listening ISO.
Well, the name is Bob, and I'm mobile at the moment, so yes, I'm going to leave it as listening.
That's fine. Welcome aboard, Bob. Good to hear you again. Just ask everybody to introduce themselves with their names, so that way people hear it from the voice that owns the voice, you know, owns the name. You know, it's better that way. Alrighty, any other Kilo 2s? Alright, any other Kilos?
KD2CW, Chris, just listening.
Kilo Delta 2, Charlie, Whiskey. Welcome aboard. Again, congratulations on passing the general a week or so ago. And, that's super. And, any other Kilos? Any
OEL.
Okay, all went to Echo Link. Are there any other Kilos, any format?
Kilo Bravo 2, Tango Romeo Whiskey. Good evening. My name is Kai. No questions, no comments, just listening.
Good evening, Kai, via Echo Link. Just curious if you're the only one on Echo Link tonight. Well, also local. I'm curious where you are this evening, or this morning, depending on where you're traveling to.
Well, I'm in the United States tonight. I'm in Clemson, South Carolina.
Oh, y'all have a good time down there, okay? Y'all be real happy. You're going to be a lot warmer than we are up here. It's 12 degrees here in Westwood right now. Just thought you'd like to know. Very, very good, guy. Alrighty. Any other Kilos or any other calls on any format?
KB2SSE.
Mr. Ken, KB2SSE, go right ahead. What is your question? What are your intentions?
Well, for the time being, just listening.
Wonderful, and Happy New Year, Mr. Ken. Alrighty, any other calls, any format? Opened up a real Pandora's box there. Okay, WA2 Quebec Bravo Charlie Bruce. What are your intentions?
No traffic, Gordon.
Welcome aboard, Bruce. Very good. Who is the station just doubled with Bruce and lost? What?
No station there. Maybe Echo Link.
All right. Any other stations we should do a check-in?
Kilo Delta 2, Delta India Golf, Don, Massapequa. Good evening, Gordon. Just listening.
Evening, Don. KD2, Delta India Golf. Welcome aboard. Always good to have our Limar friends check in. NATO.net was the inspiration for this one, though. It's been on 8 or 9 years now. Time flies when you're having fun. All right, anybody else for the net?
Camp Ford, ZHN, monitoring.
Kilo Mike 4, Golf Hotel November. Name and intentions, please.
This is Mitch, and I'm just listening. Trying to get another radio to work as a secondary activity. Thank you.
Very good, Mitch. Welcome aboard. Hopefully we'll see you tomorrow night and others at the Fairlawn Radio Club after 6 o'clock. Fairlawn Community Center. I'll by tomorrow. And I'm off from work. Call for you tomorrow morning. Although I can't do... Well, maybe I can't do coffee. All right. Anybody else? Brady, well, I think we got our roster. So, I want to make a couple of quick announcements. Don, I wanted to tip my hat at our meeting, but I did not know that our net reports were no longer welcome at the meeting. I was kind of incensed over that on Sunday. But I wanted to, again, tip my hat to you and coming out the day after Christmas. And as one of my scouts and two of my scoutmasters passed their technician. They are HUF, KD2HUH, yes, that spells HUH, and KD2HUI, all got their tickets. So thank you, rest of the team, for making that happen. The other point I wanted to make on the lead on some solar panels at about $150 a piece. We're trying to put together a group buy to knock it down to about $125 a piece. I already bought some. That's the very good 30 volt panels, which with a standard charge controller will knock down the 12 volt battery just fine. Consider that CB at WRL.net and at the Fairlawn meeting. They're roughly 125, 150 a piece. It's outstanding for a 220 watt panel shop. Poly type. Alrighty, with no further ado, pass this over to Don for his licensing. WJEK, K2BAR.
Hey, K2BAR and the net W2JEK, good evening everybody. Well, Barra's next DE test session will be Friday, January 16th, 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School. Coming, you'll need some kind of an ID, like a driver's license or a passport with a photo on it, or some other government-issued photo ID, or a photo ID. And you will need $15. The test fee is still have a license. Please bring your license and a copy of the calculator. You may. The calculator must not have anything in its memory. We will think of that. Other items such as cell phones, iPods, etc. may not be used as calculators. I think that about covers it. And I said we'll be in classroom 123, the high school. Right, go in the driveway, it's the entrance driveway, which is over on the side. Drive all the way across the front of the stop sign. Go past the stop sign into that parking area. You'll see the building juts out in the back with the door that faces the street, and that's where you'll go. Which that does it. One thing, Gordon, that people didn't know what that session was at Bergenfield. We'll have to put signs out next time. So I think your property committee ought to do something about that fence and light in the stairwell. Back to net, W2JEK.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing, isn't it? That's been a trip for a while. We've been trying to get it fixed. Yeah, I hear you. Electrician sets it up one way, and for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to match what people would normally want to do. But I hear you. The signage we can certainly handle, and be with some signage, also provide some initial lighting to the top of the stairs, so that at least no one got any very disquieting. halfway down the stairs before the light turns on. Halfway up the stairs before the light sensor is kind of in a goofy place.
Alrighty. Anybody have any comments regarding licensing for Don? Alrighty, Mr. Don, any follow-on points?
I mentioned it or not, but if you don't have a license, you have to bring your social security number. Another thing I want to mention, too, is that people that have been out of the ham, plus their ham radio licenses expired, meaning under 2 year grace period. If they had a general, advanced, or extra class license, they can get back into ham radio by just passing the current mission exam, then ham credit. We have a general license, they'll get a general license. They have license, they will get a general license again because they don't issue advanced licenses anymore. That came up in July. It has not been very well publicized, apparently. But I'd like to put back to that. W2JK.
Very good. Very good. Anybody have any questions or comments for Don? Alrighty. Mr. Steve, it's your ball. W2WKTBA. Thank you, Don.
All right, since you didn't specify, Gordon, I'll open with a comment and ask the question later. Regarding the Barra meeting format, Barra has changed the meeting format this year, and what we're doing is, after a very brief introduction by the President, Pledge of Allegiance, et cetera, we're going to go right into the meeting program, which will run, the meeting starts at 7:30, and the meeting program will run till 8:30, and we'll wait for coffee and refreshments. And then resume about 10 minutes later for a short business meeting. Figuring that most people come to the meeting, they don't want to hear all the gory details and repetitive committee reports over and over. However, your point is well taken that you had something interesting to add to the discussion. So I'm sure that we can modify our format to ask if anybody has anything they want to bring up. So, for example, if you had things to report from the TechNet or otherwise, we can get you in there, Gordon. So it's a brand new format, so it'll take a little tweaking. Thanks for bringing it up, and thanks for your patience. The other thing we did with the meeting programs, let me let it drop, is we've now opened our meetings up to the greater ham community. Anybody is welcome to attend our meetings. You don't have to become a member. Barra, you're welcome to come and enjoy the presentation. We'll be publicizing the presentation topic ahead of time. For example, in February, our division director, Mike Nisenko, NYPD, will be coming and giving us an update on what the league is doing for. That's always a very good presentation by Mike. He's very interesting. So that's that. And the other part of the comment is that we had a really interesting presentation by Chuck, KC2SST on Clublog, which is an amazing collection of QSOs, 168,937,798 Clublog data. And what Clublog lets you do is slice and dice this data six ways to Sunday so that you can use it to your advantage. For example, if you wanted to find out, you know, there's an upcoming de-expedition, when's the best time to work them, you can go in and see in the month, typically you might use CQ zone, so we're in zone 5, let's say I wanted to look at Iran. You'll know, looking at the chart by other people's cues, figure out the best time to work them is about 1300 UTC to 1400 UTC, and the best band seems to be 15. Meters. So if you're looking for a particular DX entity, it's a great way to get you a head start. So that's it for this go-round, K2BAR, WI2W.
Yeah, what's really kind of neat is it's sort of like the big data analytics, crowd sharing you know, experiential data to earn probabilities of success for subsequent activity contacts. Very, very cool. Very, very cool. High-tech and bleeding edge. It's pretty awesome stuff. Alrighty. Anybody have any comments for Steve on these? And we'd love to hear from you at this time. Okay. Steve, I just want to say
thanking me for my patience is probably more than I deserve. When I was leaving the meeting, I was somewhat less than pleased. So my apologies for that, but there's some elements of that that are probably understandable in retrospect, but certainly, I didn't go all fly off the handle, but I certainly wasn't my usual gregarious self upon departure. I just felt very strongly that, you know, some people read the bulletin, some people hear the announcement, some people only do one, but more importantly, I think, you know, we tend to be an oral or verbal kind of group, and you know, the hearing the enthusiasm kind of important. And I'll just say, when I was told I had to provide a written report in advance, that's when I kind of lost it and said, "Okay, I'm out. Goodbye. I'm just going to shut my mouth and leave before I say something stupid." But boy, I was none too pleased. So I think that the approach that you just outlined is probably a good idea. Just asking if there's anything you'd like to say, and that's good. You want to reflect that human interaction, that personal passion for what's going on to others, and that becomes infectious. And I think the fact that we generally speak check-ins week over week over week, had over 20 on New Year's Day, which is an amazing amount. That was pretty cool. But anyway, we're all good. Any further things, or do you want to issue your question at this time, Steve, or do you want to hold off on that until we get around a few other comments and questions by others? WITW, KTBAR.
I'll just add, I was unaware of your satisfaction. I don't know how you want to put it. Nobody's recording this. It doesn't matter. Politically correct. So, anyway, we will fix that. It's a new format. We'll tweak it and change it and make it work for everybody. So the object is to streamline the meeting, and but certainly up the floor for comments on any subject. And I'll hold my question till we go around. Back to Nick.
Truly. Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah. It's all good. Let's see who goes next. I guess it's Randy. Randy, it's your comment, and you're going to have to tell me where to go next. U2S from K2BAR.
Okay, Gordon, thank you. Good evening to everybody on the net. This is Randy, WU2S, with a mesh network update. For those of you that have been following the topic, we've made a lot of progress in the second half of 2014, and expect a great deal of progress this year. We finished up the end of the year with establishing internet tunnels between nodes here in New Jersey and Texas and California, and they're working well. Gordon and I had established a tunnel between his nodes and mine here as well, so we've proven the concept. And a couple of the key development leaders, Daryl in Waco, Texas, K5DLQ, and Joe in California, I'm trying to remember his case call sign, I think it's AE6CV, as well as Clint Anderson in Waco, Texas, AE5CA, have been instrumental in improving the ability of both Ubiquiti and the older Linksys nodes to talk to each other across the internet. Some additional good news, the UPS man stopped by my house this afternoon and delivered a package of new Ubiquiti nodes that we're going to have a lot of fun with. I've got another pair of NanoStation M2s, which are the 2.4 gigahertz, the Wi-Fi nodes that we've all been using in the area frequently. But in addition to that, I've got a pair of Ubiquiti M5s, which are the 5 gigahertz NanoStation, and the newer pair of NanoStation M900s that will allow us to operate on the 900 megahertz band with suitable tweaking. So we expect to make a lot of progress in the next couple of months on multiple bands. We've also demonstrated that setting up the right type of internet switch enables us to, in effect, cross-band to have multiple ubiquity nodes operating on different frequencies, in effect, relay mesh network information. So we expect a rapid expansion in capability in Bergen and Passaic counties in support of both our experiments as well as public safety. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, back to net control.
Well, that's awesome. That is really, really awesome, Randy. I will be checking some of the sites we've talked about to make sure that there's no 900 stuff, or if there is, where it is, with my little portable spectrum analyzer, a little handheld job. I've already run some sweeps in certain locations to check things out around town and the area, so I will be going to our favorite sites, and if they prove to be 900 free, or at least 900, you know, within 5 megs that we need within the 900, then should be able to go operational with a dual mode 900 2.4 gig, or yeah, probably dual mode 900 2.4 at most of these sites, and that would be a huge improvement, because we'll have the opportunity to then decide whether we want to trunk on one and use access for the other, or both. It doesn't much matter, but bottom line is that we just need to understand the performance competition might be at some of these sites. Like, there's a favorite repeater that you and I have been known to use where we cannot use 2.4 gig. Oddly enough, it's HF repeater, and you can't use 2.4 there. We can, however, probably use 900, if not there, at other similar sites, and we want to make sure that the spectrum is clear. And I've got a peak reading max hold spectrum analyzer that, you know, you just leave it there for 2 or 3 minutes and know immediately as to whether you have a problem. Longer and take a longer sample, you can. But I can run those checks in the next week or so, and while you get comfortable. But once we do those checks, then a letter can be written to the site owners as to what we're asking for, and we can go and put in for access to those sites. And I think we'll shape and have some marquee locations to network from.
That sounds real good, and I'll look forward to getting your analysis of the potential sites. Obviously, we want to do that before we just start putting nodes up. Certainly, this is not a random type of thing. We need to exhibit some prudence and some care and some respect for the other users of the spectrum. As well, and stay within the requirements of our licenses as well. So, all in good time. We'll get it done, and it'll be pretty exciting stuff. So, I'm looking forward to a very exciting and year of 2015 filled with a lot of mesh progress. I think we're going to be able to do a lot of interesting things in support of local communities here in at least the two counties, and really show again the relevance of amateur radio to people who often think of ham radio as something rather antique and using only telegraph keys and pictures of black and white pictures of men in suits and ties operating telegraph keys from the 1920s. We're far from that, as we all know, and I think we have an opportunity to display that again. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, back to net control.
Roger. Well, one of the things, now that we've got our tunnel situation straightened out, I'm going to actually set up a VoIP phone, not only on my own switch, but on barrel switch, the K5DLQ. He actually gave me a login on his login on the system for the Waco group, but he also assigned an extension, phone extension to me. That's pretty cool. I was actually thinking ultimately of making that an out trunk from my from EagleBone, but in the meantime, I'll just set up a phone and I'll set up one of the lines to ring on switch. The hell. Not like I don't have a few grand streams to kick around. So that's good. That's super. Anybody have any questions about this stuff, please call K2B Air. Just one other thing I just want to let you know. Through his five tunnels, your tunnel and my tunnel, or I should say my two tunnels, one to him and one to you, plus his five internal ones that he daisy-chained as an experiment, a really crazy one too, by the way, if you read his write-up, I was still seeing 200 millisecond ping times, and I was doing large packet pings, which is not bad. I mean, not great, but not bad, considering that there were a ridiculous number of tunnels, a ridiculous number of RF hops. It really was rather impressive as to how that was working. So, you know, to you from a site directly attached to you, it's like 50 milliseconds. From me to something that's directly tied to him is about 50 milliseconds. So, you know, 50 milliseconds is well within voice latency and other timing constraints for a lot of applications. So, not bad. I haven't done throughput yet, but I have done response time calculations or tests. So, that's good to know. I just want to let you know I had done that. All right. And when I do it a little more formally and a little more persistently, I will let the rest of the group know. But one connection is a Fios connection, and one connection was a cell, either 3G or 4G LTE connection, and they were both running about the same, which was kind of interesting. Alrighty. Randy, you have anything else?
Nothing more here, Gordon.
Very good. Okay, well, thank you very much. Mr. Steve, I would like to transition from my car to the house. So can you, I'm not Steve, Randy, can you call up the next station and just run this just for a couple of minutes so I can just transition from the car to the house and get settled, and we'll continue?
Sure, Gordon. This is Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra. Yeah, the next two items on the agenda were a question from Steve, WI2W, and then followed by a question from Noel, N2OEL. So, Steve, why don't we go to you with your question. Go ahead.
A2BAR, WI2W. This is a 3D printing question, and I haven't done my Google search yet. I want to try to use the Randy filter since you've got all that experience under your belt. A friend of mine did some printing, and he specified a hole size to create in his item. And the item was printed. The hole diameter did not match what he had specified. And I wonder how you accommodate for those things.
A great question, Steve. Yeah, for those that are doing 3D printing, again, this is just based on my experience, and nothing more. The developing holes in a in sort of some sort of object, a hole where you might intend later to put a through bolt or anchor a self-tapping screw or something like that. My experience has been that the holes are very difficult to specify with any sort of precision, and inevitably they come out somewhat undersized, which for a lot of things, if you think about it, is reasonably good, be- because you can certainly always drill out an undersized hole if it's far too undersized, and then put your through bolt. If you're using self-tapping screws, it's a little bit more of a problem. So the thing to consider is how solid is the internal structure of the object around the hole, and often you have less control over that, but at least you have some. You want something for the screw to bite into. So precision for internal holes is, again, only in my experience, is not a thing that you're going to see a lot of, unless the hole is really significantly large in terms of percentage of the whole object. So if you're building a big square or a big donut shaped object where the hole was, you know, 60 or 70% of the total diameter of the object, you might get a bit more accurate hole placement. Steve, back to you. Comment?
Okay, thanks. So smaller holes are a problem, generally undersized, which is what my friend encountered. And you haven't found a workaround yet or a way to specify it more accurately. But if you're doing larger holes, not so problem. Okay, thanks, Randy. Appreciate it. Back to net, K2BAR, WI2W.
Okay, this is K2BAR. Any other comments or questions regarding 3D printing and or specifically hole dimensioning? Okay, nothing on that topic. Thanks again for the question, Steve. And let's transition over to Noel and to OEL with your question, please.
Let me start with a comment first. I had some surgery on my knee, and it bothered me greatly. So I went online to Amazon.com and bought a TENS unit. That's a transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulator. And it puts up to 80 volts in various patterns and waveforms and so forth. And believe it or not, I was able to get the knee pain from the point where it was keeping me awake at night so I don't notice it. And that comment is apropos to us older folks who have joint pain in the knees, the hands, the feet. You can't use it on the head. You can't use it anything to go through the core of the body because you don't want to screw with your heart when there isn't. But other than that, it actually seems to work. So that's my comment.
Well, thank you, Noel. I will add to your comment based on personal experience. I think it's a similar sort of thing, but it's an over-the-counter type of thing that they sell at the local drugstore chains. Occasionally I've had lower back pain, and there's at least one or two brands of things that are similar in that they're electrical stimulants, and you just sort of affix them to your lower back and press the button, and you get that sort of relief. And I can attest that, in fact, this unit worked really quite well, and I really felt better about not taking pharmaceuticals and getting the relief from it. Back to you, Noel.
Yes, I tested the voltage out. The one that I got from the doctor that was prescribed for me will go up to 120 volts. The one that I got from Amazon for $30 is described as a massager, electrical massager, and it'll go up to 80 volts. However, in my case, my sensitivity to the electrical current is such that I never reach above a 0.6 out of 10. So there's enough there to cause me considerable pain if I would turn it up too much. However, it does work. In fact, it works so good that I just ordered one with extra pads sent to my sister, and the total cost $51, Amazon.com. $30 for the unit. The pads tend to go pretty fast, especially if your skin is greasy. So 24 more pads for $20. They're the expensive parts. But I myself can make a pad last for 15 to 20 uses by washing my body with isopropyl alcohol before I put it on. But for an older person, somebody with any kind of chronic pain, it actually puts pain nerves to sleep somehow. There are several different theories, one theory being that it exercises the nerve to the point where it just doesn't have any more energy to send pain impulses to your brain. There's a couple other theories. You can look it up on the internet. Just look up CENS unit, and you'll find all sorts of things. Now, let's get to the question. The question is, I'm going south for 5 months. I can't not take the winter. My friend Steven is driving my van down, and I'm sending him back by airplane. His mother is a friend of mine for years and years. Excuse the coffee. Anyway, I bought Gene WO2W's station that he has. It has a loop antenna. It has a TS-480, I believe, RX, which is an all-mode transistor transceiver, 160 through 2.6 meters, I guess it is. I also have ancient radio. It's a dual band UHF-VHF. I'm going to use with an aero antenna. The question is, I'm in an HOA restricted area, which is one of the reasons I got Gene's loop antenna. But I'd like to put a dipole in the attic. My attic is approximately 42 feet long. I was able to find an Alpha Delta, I believe it's a DX40. Basically a fan dipole. It's got full size 10 meter, 15 meter, 20 meter wires hang down underneath. And it's got a 40 meter loaded dipole to bring the length to a little bit under 40 feet. It'll fit in my attic, and maybe I might have to drop the ends down a foot or two. Now here's the question. Theoretically, you're supposed to feed dipoles with this feed line coming straight down. It's 25 feet, 30 feet, something like that. Unfortunately, I can't do that in this house. So what I did is I went to Palmer Engineering and I got some ferrite beads. They sell them in kits. And the kit I bought was for anything up to 160 meters. So it's a very good kit. It's got 10 beads. If you buy the half a kit, they advertise that as being anything up to 80 meters. So I intend to use this in the attic. Let me drop it for a second. Now, I would prefer to put the station at one end of the house in the bedroom. The other location is in the living room, which is a little bit closer. Maybe it would be 20 feet closer to the... Yeah, it'd be closer to the center. It's not a great location for the station. It's really... I'd be much better have it in the bedroom. The problem is that the attic's only 5 feet high. So I could drop the antenna wire straight down, and I would put five of those beads, 10 of those beads, right at the feed point, in effect making a current choke, I hope, which would effectively isolate the antenna wire from the feed line. The feed line I'm using is Times cable, UF240, that's the UltraFlex, and it's 100% shielded. The reason I want 100% shielded is I don't want interaction from the antenna into the coax feeding the antenna. So my question is, basically, if I drop it down that 5 foot and then run basically parallel to one leg of the antenna down to the end of the house and then down the wall into my station, and I use these beads, I got four sets, which would give me 80 meters, and that would be fine because the most I'm going to use is up 10 through 40. So I have 8 sets of these beads, and I was intending to break up the feed line into non-resonant lengths. And the question is this a practical thing to do? Can I get away with it? Will I load the antenna too much on one side, screw things up, maybe drive up the SWR, make it unusable? Will I get too much feedback into the rig? So that's a pretty complex question. So this is N2OEL back to K2BAR.
But a very interesting question. Thank you, Noel. Can anyone on the net respond to the question?
I'm still trying to figure out in that 3-minute question whether there was a question in there. So, number one, the antenna you want to use, the antenna you want to use is a good antenna for what you want to do. There's a guy who's got all sorts of great DX in a condo in Cedar Grove who has that K2 somebody or other, I forget his call. And then our friend Ted, W2TNE, moved into the same condo, a different building, and he's going to be doing the same thing with the same antenna shortly. So yes, you should use a line isolator or those beads, and then I would use another line isolator in front of the transmitter and be done with it. That's what I would do. And if you have to bend the antennas a little bit or, you know, to meet local conditions, it's no big deal.
I was going to also break up the feed line into non-resonant lengths by looking at one of the tables so it's non-resonant on any of the ham bands that I propose to use so that there would be less interaction between the antenna and the feed line 5 foot below it. So would I be forced to use the living room location, which is more centrally located, or could I get away with reasonably expectation of getting away with using the station at the far end of one of the antenna, right? One, it would be coming down the outside wall directly underneath the end of the antenna, 5 foot below it. That's the question.
Would mount the antenna that's optimal for the in a way that's optimal for the antenna, and then run the coax any which way you have. I mean, you have a private house, therefore you're free to run the coax anywhere you want, right?
Where in the attic that I want? It's a slab foundation raised up off the floor or the ground, so the termites can't get in, and if there's any local water, if they get floods like you would not believe. They'll get 6 inches of rain in an hour. So that's raised up. So I'm on a concrete slab that's maybe a foot thick. So there's nothing you can do going down. You can go outside and run alongside the house or any place in the central core of the house. It's difficult. The previous owner had insulated the attic, so you can't really do the side walls, but you can go down the end walls. You can go any place in the core of the house down the interior walls.
Fine, but you know, I would mount the antenna in a responsible manner, and then go from there to just run the coax any which way you have to get the.
Okay, but would I be in big trouble running the coax 5 feet away from one leg of the antenna, the way I'm describing? Since it's 100% shielded, I'm going to break it up into non-resonant lengths. Does that sound like a practical plan, or would I be probably forced to use the central location?
I would centralize and maximize the position of your antenna and then route the coax as needed to match that. Put your operating position where you want to, put the antenna where it needs to go, and use coax to join the two. I mean, we're not talking about microwave here. We're talking about HF radio.
True, and I bought a reasonably good quality coax, which I can break up into non-resonant lengths. And, of course, I'll probably use the loop antenna for receiving. I also have a tree outside that I intend to try to run enough wire up to get it on 160 and 80. I have a bunch of wire that I can use as radio. The tree, unfortunately, is only 35 feet high or so, but it's 20 feet across. It's some kind of cypress tree. And I'm going to have fun trying to get that to load up. I got a MFJ-259 or 269, whatever, antenna analyzer that I'm bringing with me. So I'll be able to see if I can get it anywhere in the region of what I want. So I'm going to have fun doing this. I'm planning to go down Monday. I have somebody who's driving me. I'm still a little weak because of the 1.6 liters of blood loss during the operation. It brings your, as the ancient people would say, I got thin blood. As the doctor would say, my hemoglobin is at 7.4. Supposed to be 13. And, of course, I had a call. But I'm doing much better. I thank everybody that gave me support when I was in the nursing home or rehab center, especially Kelly, K-A-2-T-S-L. She brought me a cooler with all the leftover Christmas food in little tiny plastic containers. That it was like a meatball, there was a submarine sandwich, there was chicken, there was pasta salad, there was apple pie. It was like fantastic. I'd like to thank Kelly publicly for that. And that's pretty much it. I'll be talking to you guys from Florida, hopefully, in a week or two. K2BR, this is N2OL.
I have to ask a question. Did you ever get your scooter in the nursing home?
No, I did not. I needed it for practice because it's not a scooter. It's a real electric wheelchair. I'm dangerous with this thing. I have to keep it turned down to the lowest level. The electrical wheelchair is rather neat. However, it's kind of got a stupid design. They don't have an off switch. So that means if a child hops on this thing, they're live. And it's stop speed. Top speed is about 12 miles an hour. You can imagine a child in a house with a joystick control electric wheelchair hopping on it, pushing it, it comes alive just from you sitting in it, and push that joystick and away you go. Scary. So I'm going to put a slick key switch in. So it's a wondrous thing. I bought it for $800. The new price is in the 4,000 range. It was used about 3 months and the guy died, supposedly. It's like, looks like brand new, and it's got a good battery charge. Quality manufacturing, actually. What I'm going to use it for is walking the dog, basically, down in Florida, or if I go to a flea market or some, you go to the supermarket, it's easier to get in and out, since I do have a full handicap van. Back to net, K2BR and 2AL.
As witnesses, I'm going to tell you this on the air, which I wouldn't tell you on the phone, and that is, every time you told us you were on painkillers and that you were as high as a kite, you were at, that's when you were most insistent on having the vehicle. And since we knew it would run over 10 miles an hour, we also checked with the facility. The facility wanted no part of that vehicle in there. And if they weren't going to tell you, I wasn't going to tell you. So, Tony didn't know that, but between the two of us, we really did have a logistical problem with getting the key from each other. But more importantly, a decision was made that someone who's high as a kite, per his own words, should not be driving.
Yes, but there's a rabbit mode that you would use in a room or something like that, which barely moves the thing. It got like five gear ranges. And when I was in Burger Mall, I was in fifth, and never again. It's just too fast. This thing is not safe at 12 miles an hour. But in rabbit mode, the top speed is about a mile and a half an hour, and it's maybe even slower than that. It's great for creeping around a facility. I just wanted to get used to using the darn thing because there is some joystick control. And yes, I was reasonably well medicated, as the facility kept saying. I, of course, preferred to say I was stoned. But I got reasonably well medicated, and I did get a lot of rehab in, and I'm very happy with my progress. By the way, if anybody doesn't know, I had my left femur replaced, which is like a knee and a hip on the same side, plus everything in between. The femur replacement looks like a sword. It's fat, about 3/8 of an inch thick, about 1 3/8, 1.5 inches, and they showed me pictures of it laying next to my real femur that they had extracted as they were measuring to make it the right length, which is pretty gruesome. Anyways, I'm doing well. I'm really thankful to the modern medicine of the, and the hospital and the facilities that we have, and Obamacare, really, they did something right. It didn't cost me a penny, not even the $100 deductible. So, back to that for the last time, KTBR and 2OEL.
Yeah, well, I understand, but the administrator that I was talking to, I didn't get their name, some lady indicated that no, hell no, and absolutely not, am I to bring that there. So that was the decision, and when the facility speaks, I didn't want to create a situation where you would be in a pissing contest with them. So and when I reflected this to Tony, he said, well, all right, but you know, we decided just basically to suck it up, and then we truly did have trouble getting a hold of each other. Then it didn't matter because you were coming home, so we just left it alone. But we are so glad that everything worked out, because we know you were filled with apprehension before this particular operation. You've been through a few knees and hips before, but this, I know, had you on pins and needles a bit, and for good reason. And I'm glad everything's working out, and your rehab sounds great. And I will say this, since you've checked in a bunch of times since the surgery, this is the most, should we say, animated, energetic, and lucid that you've been. And you can actually listen to the past nets. I think Randy made a reference that there's no recording here. Maybe Steve did. But point of fact, yes, all nets are recorded by amateurradio.tangovictor. Amateurradio.tangovictor. You can find the recent nets on, and also all the nets except for the first three, going back to the first year, are all on that website. So consider that. So Noel, welcome back, and that's all good. N2OEL, and I guess back to Randy. For who's our next contributor? This is W2TTT.
WI2W with antenna comments.
Please, Steve, go right ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Noel, first thing, I had a little experience with that antenna you're talking about. Richard, K2CB, and myself put one of those up in the trees for Junsu, KD2EXV, months ago. One thing I will say is it has loading coils near the end of it to shorten it for 40 meters, and it's very, very touchy on setting the length correctly. Comes after the loading coil. It's a very narrow bandwidth antenna on 40 because of those coils, so very tricky to tune, and you won't be able to tune it until you actually get it into a position in your attic, so you're going to need some help to adjust the end for the part of the 40 you want to work in. Know that the changes are made in like half an inch at a time, not 6 or 8 or 10 inches. Analyzer will help you out a lot there. The other question about where to put the feed line in your station, you're just going to have to try it. You won't know until you get it there. Also recognize the antenna's only going to be 10, 15, maybe 12 feet above your head, if that. So maybe you want to do some calculations on RF safety and see how much power you're going to put. The most important thing is to get a big, heavy choke current balun right at the radio. Currents that are picked up on the outside of the shield will not get into the rest of your system. But being your station is going to be directly underneath one end of the antenna, probably going to have some RF issues getting into your microphone, your foot switch, your headphones, but be prepared to experiment a little. One way to do that is to drop your power down to 5 watts